You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers' Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters' plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters' plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
If we have the technology to track the movements of everyone in America, we should use it, right? No, shout most of us, proud that our country has fought from the start to prevent prying authorities from constantly keeping tabs on where we go and what we do. So, how can the authorities break down this innate resistance that we Americans have to Big Brotherism? One simple word, whisper today's technocratic Machiavellians. Children. Of course, we love our children and naturally want them to be safe. There's the perfect opening for the snoopercrats. It's an insecure world, they darkly warn us. Terrorists, kidnappers, molesters, you name it. To protect children, we should electronically track them. It's out of love that we do this. Thus, the school district of Spring, Texas is now issuing radio frequency ID cards to its school kids so police can track each of them on a computer screen. Did little Jeannie stop off at her friend's house rather than going straight home after school? With her RFID tag, the authorities know where she is. It's security paranoia. This district has not had a single problem with child disappearances. But, says one mother, you hear about all this violence. So, like keeping track of livestock and Walmart merchandise, parents have okayed the tracking of their own children. Indeed, authorities in Spring are now considering having the RFIDs implanted under the skin of each child. Then they could track them 24/7. Not everyone is thrilled. It's too big brother for me, says a 15-year-old student. Something about the school wanting to know the exact place and time makes me feel kind of like an animal. This is Jim Hightower saying, exactly. Rebel, kids. But of course, the youngest ones can't rebel and will grow up without knowing any different system. Wearing a chip will be normal to them, and they'll not object to having one as an adult, too.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricetin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricetin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricetin HBP. Use as directed.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org and at tomhartman.com. You want to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which hosts our live chat. A lot in the news today. Representative John Conyers, along with the Reverend Jesse Jackson and others, are in Ohio today. We'll be giving you updates as the day goes on. John Conyers just sent out a press advisory. Representative John Conyers, holding a congressional forum in Columbus concerning new evidence of election irregularities and fraud in Ohio. I assume you caught the news. It's been fairly widely noted here, there, and everywhere else, that on Friday of last week, there were some folks trying to look at the vote in one of the counties. We'll have that information as we get into it here today. I'll get into this a little bit later on. And the Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, came in. Now, this was one of the counties. There were three districts in this county where there was 50% voter turnout, which is off the rails. I mean, it's just absurdly low. And Ken Blackwell came in and said, you can't look at these anymore. Sorry. And as I recall, it was Warren County. It's in the stack here. We're going to get to it. But the folks showed up on Saturday to the building where the ballots were being held. And lo and behold, the building was unlocked. Voting machines were right there. This is supposed to be, if you're going to do an audit, you have to do an audit of untampered with information. I think we could safely say that ain't the case anymore. So anyhow, John Conyers, Maxine Waters, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, Ted Strickland, Ohio State Senator Ray Miller, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Professor Robert Fitrakis, who has been doing some of the finest reporting on this thing with the Free Press of Columbus, Ohio, Cliff Arnebeck, independent attorney, Joan Bonifaz, the General Counsel of the National Voting Rights Institute, Gregory Moore of the NAACP National Voter Fund, and Councilwoman Charletta Taveras will all be at this gig, or are at it, actually. It started about an hour and a half ago. And as things come up, as information comes up, we'll let you know about that. Our number, by the way, today, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. If you have any calls, thoughts, concerns, pretty much anything, we're going to make it sort of a laid-back day today, a little less tightly formatted. Part of the reason why is because I'm going to be doing 7 hours of continuous talk radio today instead of the normal three. I'm going to be filling in for Randy Rhodes on her program on Air America from 3 until 7. And it's not that I'm saving my voice or anything. Actually, we've got 7 folders and an inch and a half thick stack of stuff here. It's going to be quite a day. The Ohio electors today, of course, are expected to certify the vote, paving the way for the recount to begin. Now, this is, you know, again, Ken Blackwell gaming the system. A recount, according to Ohio law, a recount can't begin until the vote has been certified. And so he's been putting this off and putting this off and putting this off in the hopes that no recount can begin in a way, you know, until there's been such a pileup of of time, until there's so little time, until all pile up of news events that everything's fine, don't worry, and time has gone by and people have forgotten about it and blah de blah de blah. And so the recount, if it's going to have any effect on the election, and the official word, by the way, is still that it won't. This is the official kind of carry DNC word, but there are a lot of people looking at these numbers saying it's increasingly looking like there was major vote fraud in Ohio, and not just in Ohio, but if they can nail it in Ohio, it actually would turn the election. But in any case, Ken Blackwell trying to make sure that the recount does not happen before the coronation in January, certainly not before the electors are chosen, and certainly not before the electors vote in early January in Washington, D.C. So that's one thing that's happening. They're going to certify the vote today. We'll keep you up to date on that. Secondly, Cliff Arnebeck, this lawyer from Ohio, this morning filed a lawsuit challenging the actual result of the Ohio election, actually saying the Ohio election is not valid. And his argument is the same argument that's being used in the Ukraine. He argues that if it weren't for voter fraud, suppression, and irregularities, long lines, a shortage of machines in heavily Democratic and African-American districts, and these sorts of fun and games, John Kerry would have won, and the results should therefore be overturned. He doesn't even get into the stuff that I'm frankly amazed I haven't seen more of this in the media. Even in the non-mainstream media, why hasn't, you know, Buzz Flash and Truth Out and everybody else been talking about this? And that is this corporation that was funded by former Enron lobbyist and RNC chairman Ed Gillespie's Republican National Committee, as far as anybody can tell, that was going into communities. We know that they were in Nevada. We know that they were in Oregon. We know that they were in Ohio, where they were standing on street corners in heavily Democratic areas and saying, would you sign a petition to decriminalize marijuana for medical purposes? Now, this is a subject that if somebody says yes, you can pretty well assume that they would, you know, the odds are 70, 80, probably even 90% that they would vote Democratic. And so they have this clipboard and they hand it to you. And you fill out the form with your name and your address, and you sign it. And there's a little piece up at the top that is buried underneath the clip on the clipboard that you don't see, which says that you are in some way changing your voter registration. You're changing to another precinct, or you're changing your party affiliation from Democratic to Republican or from Independent to whatever it may be. You're making some change. And so these people who signed these petitions, what they thought was a petition, were actually messing with their name on the voter rolls, so when they showed up to vote, they were told, well, you know, something has changed, or you're not who you said you were, you're in the wrong place, or whatever, and here, fill out a provisional ballot. And the provisional ballot had this funny little thing on it where you had to sign it in a certain place, and you had to check certain boxes that were filled out with legalese. And a lot of people didn't get it, that they had to both check this box saying, yes, I am a citizen, and they had to sign below saying, yes, I am a citizen and eligible to vote. And so they didn't check the box, and so the provisional ballots got thrown out. There's thousands of these, tens of thousands of these things. So there's that. And then there's the other voter fraud that, again, I haven't seen much mention of. I mean, this was widely reported. It's not being disputed. That could flip an election, particularly an election that was decided if the margin of votes was 114,000 people, then roughly 60,000 people changing their vote or voting in a different way. The other thing that hasn't been talked about is this another phony organization, also with ties to the Republicans, that was setting up tables outside malls, outside shopping centers, outside grocery stores, outside federal buildings that said, register to vote here. And they were registering people to vote. And there were a lot of people who were registering to vote. And on the form where you register to vote, of course, there are a couple of checkboxes. You can register to vote as a Republican, which means in some states, only registered Republicans can vote in the Republican primary and only registered Democrats can vote in the Democratic primary. In some states, they have what are called open primaries, so regardless of how you register, you can vote in either one. But in any case, you check the box, Republican, Democrat, or Independent, which gives the people who are signing you up a clue as to how you might vote in the election. And if you check the independent box, they might even make some little comment or question that would elicit from you your bias toward Kerry or Bush. And then after you leave, having thought that you have signed up, particularly where they were setting these little card tables up outside federal buildings and courthouses and state office buildings and things, and these were all over the country. This is a private corporation being paid for with Republican money. After you leave, it has been documented. There's videotape of this. There's one of the TV stations in Las Vegas, Nevada, and as I recall, another one in Oregon videotaped this. After you leave, if you didn't check the I'm a Republican box, your voter registration form got torn up and thrown away. So you show up at the polls on election day, say, I'm here to vote. And they say, no, you're not, because you're not a registered voter. But I registered just 2 weeks ago. Well, we find no evidence of it. You can fill out a provisional ballot if you want. So they take a provisional ballot and they fill it out. But there is no record of their having registered. So that provisional ballot simply gets thrown away, even if they sign the line and check the box. And then there was the third one. And this was the phone banks who were calling people who are registered Democrats, because you can get lists. These are public records of people who are registered by party affiliation. In fact, this is something that the folks from Democracy for America were making heavy use of, where they would get a list of all the registered Democrats in, for example, Ohio, and handwrite them to, in one county, there's 30,000. They get 30,000 people to write a personal letter to these folks saying, you really ought to please vote for John Kerry. Here's why. And I'm just another person like you. And I happen to live in Connecticut or New Hampshire or Vermont or Montana or whatever. They had people all over the country writing letters to voters, in a few swing states, Ohio, California, Florida, excuse me. So the lists of who are the registered Democrats are available. So what did they do? They went through and they called the registered Democrats, particularly those in minority districts, and said, hi, we're with the Cuyahoga County Election Commission, whatever it may be, whatever county they happen to live in. And just want to let you know that because there have been so many turnouts and the election is going to be so heavily turned out, so many folks are going to show up to vote, in order to minimize the lines, we're going to have Republicans vote on Tuesdays, on Tuesday, December 2nd, and Democrats are going to vote on either Wednesday, December 3rd, or Thursday, December 4th. Some were told one, some were told the other. And sure enough, on the 3rd and the 4th, there were people showing up at the polling places saying, I'm here to vote! I got the phone call! And, of course, there was nobody there to take their vote. Why isn't... maybe it'll come up today. We'll see. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Tonight, journey to a place where darkness battles light, and all that stands between them is the magic of one wizard. The Sci-Fi Channel presents the next great fantasy adventure, Legend of Earthsea.
So this is our destiny.
You know we've been brought together.
Danny Glover, Isabella Rossellini, X-Men's Sean Ashmore, Smallville's Kristen Kruk, a Sci-Fi Channel original miniseries, Legend of Earthsea, premieres tonight at 9, 8 central, only on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We bang the drum slowly and play the fife slowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight, you can show me a new place to start.
And welcome back, exposing the con and conservative. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Is America the world's oil cop? A couple questions for today. Are conservatives phoning up a war on Christmas? just because they need another, you know, you got to have an enemy, right? Or you can't marshal the troops. Let me get into that as the program goes on. Should we abolish the United Nations? We're going to be talking to Andrew Bernstein from the Ayn Rand Institute in the third hour of our program. He's suggesting the UN is, not only is it has its time come and gone, he's going to say. It never should have been. And I, of course, am going to tell him he's nuts. So we will have an interesting conversation there. 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. What's up?
How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Rick?
So it's a long day for you today, huh?
It'll be a long day, but it'll be a fun day. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, speaking of the third hour, they don't carry that here in Grand Rapids. Maybe you can see if you can talk them into carrying it eventually.
Well, you know, what our stations do is what they do, and I respect everybody's programming decisions.
Okay.
Anyhow, but that's not what you called about it.
No, you're bringing up some real horror stories there, and of course people on the right would say, oh, there go those leftist conspiracy theorists, even though the conspiracy theories, as you know, for the most part, at least historically, have been on the right, you know?
Yeah.
But
the communists under every bed, right?
Oh,
they're in the State Department. They're in the Defense Department. I remember it well.
You got the Illuminati, the international bankers, and a lot of that may be true, you know, but the point is conspiracies have been ridiculed, you know. I mean, there's a reason why the word is in the dictionary, after all.
Mm-hmm.
But as we speak, I'm watching this 51st Ohio Electoral College. You're going through all the ceremony in the Senate chamber of the State House in Columbus, Ohio. And I think I've talked to you before, and you actually said you support the Electoral College being in existence, correct?
Well, I'm ambivalent. Here's my concern. In order to get it out of the Constitution, and I may be wrong on this, but I believe that it's going to require either a constitutional convention or a constitutional amendment. And my concern is that when we start fiddling with the Constitution, I know it'll require a constitutional amendment. I don't frankly think it will necessarily require a constitutional convention, but it may. And my concern is that when you start fiddling with the Constitution at the level of how the vote is handled, mm-hmm. then you're walking into a minefield, particularly when Republicans who, in many cases, the Tom DeLays and Bill Frist, certainly the Republicans, are essentially, in my opinion, Stalinists. They're interested in a one-party state. They have no interest in the kind of representative democracy, adversarial representative democracy, where you've got really two sides to the argument and one side keeps the other side in check, and you know the interplay that we've had historically. And I'm just concerned that we may end up with something far worse than we have. I think the easier solution is for individual states to do what Maine and Nebraska have already done, what Colorado had on a referendum this year, and that is to go to proportional representation for their electors and just do it like that. And
I think when you bring up Stalin, you're going too far. I mean, let's not besmirch Stalin by comparing him to Frist. Well, Frist doesn't seem like a bad guy. DeLay?
Frist doesn't seem like a bad guy?
Not compared to DeLay.
Frist just is more sophisticated.
Tom DeLay, to my estimation,
he's a thug. Tom DeLay is a thug.
He's arguably the worst elected official ever in the history of our country. I mean, I don't know how this. I can't even use the words, or the FCC would take you off, or you'd blank me, or whatever. But and I don't want to talk about Tom DeLay. I guess this Electoral College thing is such a farce to me.
Yeah.
And I think that.
Well, you know, but Rick, the only difference between having or not having the Electoral College is that small states have two votes more than big states, basically, because a small state, you know, the number of electors you have is your number of members of Congress plus your members of the House of the Senate. And so small states have two senators, and like here in Vermont, we only have one congressman. So we'd have three electoral votes.
Well, I guess
I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I guess I don't look at it as a bunch of states or a bunch of cities or a bunch of counties. I look at it as a bunch of people who should have the right to directly elect our president.
Well, and see, if individual states proportionately allocated their electors based on the vote within the state, the effect would be the same, and it wouldn't require tinkering with the Constitution. In fact, it could be done with a grassroots effort on a state-by-state basis across the United States fairly quickly. And I think it's something the Democratic Party and the Green Party should take up. That's my take on it. And thanks for the call, Rick. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's a very Gotti Christmas on A&E.
I want you away from me right now. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to look at you right now.
Join the Gottis for a special hour of caring.
I think you shouldn't get anything.
And sharing.
I don't have any jail! I don't have any jail!
Tune in to A Very Gotti Christmas, tonight at 9, 8 Central, only on A&E.
There's so much love in the house.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers' Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters' plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters' plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
My daddy was the family basement. Your mom was an engineer. And I was born one dark Christmas morning. Music coming in my ears, in my ears.
In my ears! Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. You might want to remind your listeners, writes Barbara Taylor, correspondent, dropped me an email, that during World War II, such criminal malfeasance, she's speaking of the what's going on with Rummy and the whole this discovery now that we've got a bunch of Humvees that are in need of repair, that haven't been repaired and all, just this whole stuff. Such criminal malfeasance was memorialized in plays such as All My Sons by Arthur Miller. I have to confess, it's one that I never saw, read, or performed the year that I did theater in high school. The main line, storyline of the play, however, she says, as you probably know, and as I said, I don't, but maybe you do, my kind listeners, is that the father had sent defective planes to the Pacific. The father was a defense contractor to save having to repair them. In other words, to make more money. In the end, his greed comes back to bite him in a very personal way when a letter from his son, a pilot in the war, who died in the line of duty, is found intimating that he, the son, had found out about his father's shady business practices and therefore was going to kill himself. And back then, Barbara says, I guess, some people still had some honor. In the meantime, at a time when U.S. troops in Iraq are complaining that they have to scrounge for equipment, this is from a story by John McCarthy, McCarthy in the Associated Press. At a time when U.S. troops in Iraq are complaining they have to scrounge for equipment, six Ohio-based reservists were court-martialed for taking Army vehicles abandoned in Kuwait by other units so that they could carry out their unit's mission in Iraq. The reservists took two tractor trailers and stripped parts from the 5-ton truck that had been abandoned in Kuwait by other units that had already moved into Iraq. One of the reservists, Daryl Burt of Columbus, told the Associated Press on Sunday. Burt, a former chief warrant officer, and the others were charged with theft, destruction of Army property, and conspiracy to cover up their crimes. He and the two others pled guilty, and the other three were convicted, all received six-month sentences. This includes the 656th former company commander, Major Kathy Klaus. She's serving a six-month sentence. She and Burt have applied for clemency. This is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. It's they're taking trucks, vehicles that have been abandoned, and taking parts off them to repair their vehicles. Maybe even armor them. I don't know. It doesn't get into that here. Just to repair them, and being charged with messing with, you know, you're not supposed to do it that way. Shades of what was it? Osarian? Catch 22. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just want to make a few comments. You're talking about the apparent criminal activity or funded by the GOP as far as these sort of bogus voter registration companies.
Well, we know that one of them was explicitly and directly funded by the GOP.
Wouldn't that violate the federal RICO statutes, the interstate organized crime?
It may well. And you know who's in charge of prosecuting RICO?
Ashcroft?
That's right, the Justice Department. It has to. Those are lawsuits that have to be initiated at the federal level.
Yeah, and from what I understand, those RICO statutes, those are some. You can get some pretty long prison sentences.
Oh yeah, it's like the old John Dillinger thing. You know, they couldn't get him for robbing banks or whatever, and so they ended up getting him for tax evasion, which was enough. I mean, RICO's really tough stuff. However, I mean, this is, in my opinion, if there was voter fraud, and frankly, I've been saying for 2 years now, I am strongly, irrevocably, unassailably convinced that there has been substantial voter fraud, particularly electronic voting fraud, in the 2000 and the 2002 elections. I believe Max Cleland was elected to the United States Senate. It was flipping his election that gave the Senate to the Republicans in 2002, and along with Paul Wellstone being killed in his plane crash, but Cleland was the thing that flipped it over the top. And yet all the polls, the exit polls, everything else showed Cleland winning. And this was right after Georgia had gone to virtually 100% no audit trail, paperless machines, and in a piece I did for Alternet that MoveOn.org mailed out to the 1.7 million people at that time was their mailing list. This was almost 2 years ago. I pointed that out, and I am still of the opinion that Max Cleland won that election, and I have a feeling that he is too, by the way, from some of the comments he's made. And voter fraud happened this time. And this isn't, you know, sore loser kind of stuff. This is the ultimate issue here is even more not whether or not there was voter fraud, but whether or not we have a system where it looks like there's voter fraud. I mean, we've got a system that appears to be even more corrupt than the Ukraine. And that's not good for democracy, whether it's Republicans doing it, Democrats doing it, or whatever. But because you have an absolute Republican majority in the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, not to mention the judiciary now, none of this is going to get investigated. And George W., you know, the guy who, along with his administration, might be charged with the crimes, has just put his personal lawyer in charge of the Justice Department, making it even cozier. I mean, at least, in Nixon, well, we need not get into that anyway. That's the thing.
Quickly, I just wanted to say, I know you're going to be doing Randy Rhodes this afternoon.
Yeah.
And she has, I do believe they have an AM station in Columbus, Ohio, so definitely go on the Ohio voter register.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be revisiting that program all throughout the day as events come in. So, yeah, absolutely. Okay, thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Adam in Denver, California. I just moved your state, Adam. Denver, Colorado. Hey, how you doing?
You moved me to a blue state, Tom. I can live with that.
Okay, all right. Maybe I did you a favor. What's up, Adam?
The ultimate irony, this is one of the reasons I left the Army years ago, is that, the woman who was in charge of that Ohio National Guard unit was also decorated with the Bronze Star for doing such a good job in carrying out the missions, which they had to scrounge equipment to do.
Right. Yeah, that's why I said it's like Catch 22. In the Korean War and World War II, it was incompetence. There was confusion. There was the fog of war, all that. But there was a broad consensus that we were doing everything we could. I mean, GM was cranking out tanks like nobody's business. We were building ships and destroyers. Mothers were leaving their home to work, and as their husbands had gone off to war, it was. The people were saving it. Women were saving their nylon stockings and sending them off to be made into parachutes. People didn't, they were recycling their rubber tires so they could be used in airplanes. There was rationing of food and gasoline so there'd be enough for the military. But in this war, we have, oh, don't worry, be happy. We'll just borrow billions, trillions. We'll just borrow trillions of dollars from our children and our grandchildren to pay for this thing. And, of course, now the world is starting to notice. That's a whole other thing we're going to get into later on in the program. But yeah.
Exactly. And, what these guys did was nothing that I hadn't done in a peacetime army and just gotten a nod, a wink, and a laugh.
Yeah.
People in my chain of command. It's just disgraceful. And yeah. This is coming at a time when they're trying to recruit people.
I know, and they're having to pay $20,000 to get them in. It's off the wall. Adam, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Let's hear what Joe Biden and Chuck Hagel had to say about this. This was on Meet the Press this weekend. Joe Biden was asked. I've met Joe Biden, and I have to tell you. If there was a Democrat running for, and maybe he's, I don't know if he's with the DLC or not. I really don't know that, at that level. But I have to tell you, this guy is one of the smartest human beings in the United States Senate. He is absolutely brilliant. He has incredible charisma. And I would vote for him in a heartbeat. He's, of course, the senator from Delaware, so I don't have an opportunity to. But Joe Biden, his thoughts on Don Rumsfeld saying to our troops,
yeah, you go to war with the army you've got,
as if the war was thrust upon
us. If, in fact, we went with the army we had and is this ill-equipped, then, in fact, we should have waited, because this was a war of choice that I supported.
Now, see, the war of choice part of it, and he says that I support it, interesting, the war of choice part of it somehow doesn't make the news media. Have you heard that in any news accounts? I haven't. I haven't heard it on any of the network news. You certainly won't hear it on faux news. Biden continues.
There was no sense of urgency to go when we did. The truth is...
Well, hang on just a second, Joe. I got to say, there was a sense of urgency. The urgency was that Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei, Blix looking for chemical and biological weapons and conventional explosives and weapons, and El-Baradei looking for nuclear weapons, that these two guys were telling the United Nations, telling the world, telling us that any day now, well, specifically within 3 to 4 weeks, in all probability, that they would know whether or not, absolutely, they would know whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That they were about to nail this thing down. And once that happened, Resolution 1440 said that hostilities against Iraq could only commence, if the weapons inspectors for the United Nations, that being Blix and El-Baradei, if one of these two guys or both of them certified in writing to the Security Council that they had found evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that were in violation of previous UN resolutions. And these guys were saying, any day now, we will know for sure. In fact, Blix, Rumsfeld would come out, well, we know right where they are. They're up north of Baghdad, and they're over west of Baghdad. And Blix held a press conference and said, hey, If Rumsfeld knows where they are, tell me and I'll go find them. And what happened? We couldn't wait. And we couldn't wait because, in my opinion, had we waited, we would have ended up, you know, very clearly, rather conspicuously, we would have ended up with a situation where we were unable to go to war, shall we say? Shall we say graciously? Let me just recue this.
There was no sense of urgency to go, and we did.
Yeah,
the truth is, as I believe Senator Hagel would agree with me, because we've been there four times together, we did not go with the army we had. We had an incredibly heavy mechanized army we left at home. Speaking with the general of the 1st Cav, who was in charge of the 1st Cavalry, an honorable, tough, straight-shooting division, pointed out to us at the front end of the war, he wasn't allowed to take all his heavy equipment. He's still not able to take all his heavy equipment.
The story that the company that could make the armored Humvees could make 20% more is in the news. Where is the story that the heavy equipment is still sitting here in the United States, the armored 1st Cavalry Division's heavy equipment? Joe Biden's talking about it, but have you heard this on the news?
We went into war without the hundreds of thousands of troops that we needed, and so you can't have it both ways here.
Yeah, you definitely can't have it both ways. Now, okay, that's Joe Biden. He's a Democrat. He's going to pick on the president, you know. You knew that, right, of course. He's a Democrat. He's going to go after that. So let's hear from a Republican. Here's Chuck Hagel, the fellow that, you know, I have a few problems with, seeing as how he used to be the president of the company that became ES&S, one of the largest voting machine companies in the United States. And he was elected to the Senate, a dark horse candidate, once he had sold the machines to the state of Nebraska and elected on his own machines. But setting that aside for the moment, as I've been telling you now for two years, Chuck Hagel is going to be the next Republican candidate for president of the United States in all probability. Anyhow, here's Chuck Hagel.
Secretary Rumsfeld's response to this young soldier. That soldier and those men and women there deserved a far better answer from their Secretary of Defense than a flippant comment. That might work in a newsroom when you can be cute with the television audience, but not when you're putting these men and women in harm's way who will be wounded, some will be killed. And I wonder what the parents thought. I wonder what the parents thought. The parents who have men and women over there, sons and daughters who are fighting. I don't think they've appreciated that answer.
Yeah. A bit of an understatement. American Progress Action Fund points out today, the National Guard and Reserve forces lack adequate training and equipment to do heavy fighting. And yet, according to one news report I saw today, they're taking about half the casualties. Well, here, in fact, a new report by USA Today shows in a reversal of trends from past wars, part-time soldiers in the Army National Guard are about one-third more likely to be killed in Iraq than full-time active-duty soldiers serving there. One-third more likely to be killed? Could it be because they don't have the training and equipment? The statistics bear this out. The active Army has seen one death for every 402 soldiers deployed. Boy, that's an amazing statistic. Somebody came up to you and said, let's think of a good metaphor. There are roughly, as I recall, there's about 13,000 flights a day in the United States. That's my recollection. I could be wrong on that. 13,000. So if one out of every 402 planes every day went down, that would be roughly 30 jumbo jets falling out of the sky every single day in the United States. So somebody came up to you and said, yesterday 30 planes crashed in the United States, and the day before 30 planes crashed, and the day before 30, would you like to get on a plane? What would you say? I mean, if these people are going to be honest with the soldiers, this is the question they should be asking. The statistics bear this out. The active Army has seen one death for every 402 soldiers deployed. The Army Guard, however, sees one fatality for every 262 soldiers who've served, or a 35% higher death rate. Remarkable. And this, as a war of choice, to, as Karl Rove laid out, help George W. Bush get reelected, because no wartime president has ever failed to get reelected.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't worry about the ABM treaty. Don't worry what the Russians will say. Cause when we have control of outer space, we can blow them all away.
Yeah, control of outer space. Apparently that's what this new boondoggle, the Defense Department, or the NSA or the CIA or somebody wants to insert into some piece of spending legislation, that you've got senators like Jay Rockefeller coming out and saying, wait a minute, this is a waste of taxpayer money, and it may start a new arms race. So, Rama Schneider in the studio today, engineering the program, he just came in and he asked a really good question, one that I occasionally flips through my mind, and I haven't really done a good search on, but I've been keeping my eye out for. Perhaps somebody in our chat room or one of our listeners can call in with the information. Has anybody anywhere seen any kind of polls or ballot count of how the military voted in this last election? I'm really curious. We generally hear, well, the military voted 73% in favor of, and that sort of thing. There was a big talk. I mean, it was a big deal in the 2000 election, how the military was voting for George W. Bush instead of Al Gore. Whether it was just made up, I don't know, or whether it was based on some real count. I think there were some states that actually published it, but I haven't seen anybody publish any military vote counts anywhere, and I would love to know. I'm really curious. How did the military vote in this election? Rahm also tells me Dillinger was shot by the FBI. Capone went to jail for tax evasion. Thank you for keeping me straight here. The administration failed this, back to the American Progress Action Fund's points. The administration failed to protect our troops with adequate protection. I provide our troops with adequate. Anticipating an easy fight, they failed to gather the necessary armor and equipment. For example, the Pentagon said it would need 235 armored Humvees in Iraq. All right. In reality, it needs 8,105, 35 times as many as they predicted before the war. These guys can't even plan a war right, and we want them to plan Social Security? Don Rumsfeld last week, his basic message to the soldiers, suck it up. Soldiers are taking it upon themselves to push back. As I mentioned, the 343rd Quartermaster Company were disciplined and demoted for refusing to carry out a highly dangerous mission with inadequately protected vehicles. Sergeant Scott Montgomery, who was wounded by shrapnel in the attack, said, had we not had armor in our vehicle, my entire crew would have been killed, as has happened to so many, Support our troops, bring them home, and change the administration while you're at it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Although it's probably going to take impeachment at this point. If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers' Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
When is an election over? When the votes are counted, right? Thus, Republican Dino Rossi says he's the new governor of Washington State. Not only were the votes counted, but also recounted by electronic machines, and Dino promptly declared himself the victor by a whopping margin of 42 votes. Yes, 42 votes out of 2.8 million votes cast on November 2nd, the tiniest margin of any gubernatorial election in U.S. history. Still, Rossi proclaimed himself governor-elect, had a victory party, and departed for a 7-day Caribbean cruise. But wait, says the Democratic candidate, Christine Gregoire, the vote is not over until every vote is counted and counted accurately. Democracy demands no less than that for elections to be legitimate, and, in the Washington State case, that accuracy is very much in question. Counties report that some of their electronic recounts don't match the number of physical ballots, that they have had computer glitches, that some precincts were double-counted, etc. So Gregoire is calling for a hand count of all 2.8 million votes as the only way the vote can be truly verified, and her supporters have raised the money to pay for it. Oh no, wails Rossi, we can't have this. Now back from the Caribbean, he says that he's tanned, rested, and ready. He's already been picking out new drapes and carpet for the governor's office, so he and his partisans have demanded that Gregoire be a good sport and go away. Go away? What about the right of all voters to trust that their ballots were counted as cast? The 42-vote margin is 0.0014% of the total vote, well within the margin of error for computerized counting machines. Sure, a hand count will take a few more weeks, but what's that compared to getting a governor who's actually legitimate? This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time for all of us to take a stand somewhere for the integrity of our vote. To do it in Washington State, call 206-328-2969.
The notion of a 40-hour work week is several hours short of reality. Working long hours is a given when you run your own business. That's why Sam's Club carries products to help make that easier. You can count on Sam's Club to have just what you need. Bounty paper towels, Charmin bath tissue, Puffs tissues, and other quality brands, all at everyday low costs. After all, we know that time and money are important to you. Helping you make the most of both is why we're here. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. If you want to drop into the chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. It'll take you over the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Interesting day. There is this story, this dramatic reality. You may recall a week or so ago. In fact, I think it was a week ago today that over the weekend, Louise and I had gone to see Alexander, the new Oliver Stone movie. And my comment was that it was a fascinating bit of history that I learned more of from watching the movie, which is was very carefully constructed to be historically accurate, that I learned more about him from watching the movie than I had from, 30 years of on and off here and there, not to mention high school, reading about Alexander the Great and the Macedonians and the Greeks and all that kind of stuff. It was fascinating. But it wasn't dramatic. And the reason it wasn't dramatic was because the demons that Alexander was fighting against appeared to be inside him rather than outside him. And those internal demons, because whatever they are, whatever they might have been, was lost to history. And Stone was so into making a truly true-to-history movie, he didn't particularly speculate on them, are unknown. So, there are movies where you see a person who is struggling with their own inner demons, and it can make for a good drama. But the reality of drama, in general, right across the board, the reality of drama, and ultimately the reality of politics. But, just keep us to drama for a second, then I'll take it to politics. Whether it's a novel, a story, a movie, whatever it may be, the reality of it is that a good character, a hero, can never be stronger, brighter, better, gooder. Yeah, I know there's no such word, but you know what I'm talking about. Can never be perceived as being more good, more powerful, more noble than his opponent is evil. Where would Frodo be if the ring didn't have a dark side? He wouldn't have a story. You have a bunch of hobbits traveling around the country. Oh, we got this ring. Let's go for a walk. Even if they had to take it and destroy it because, you know, some horrible thing. If they didn't have terrible opponents. If Luke Skywalker didn't have Darth Vader. It would have been a boring story. Or the, you know, the internal demons. If Humphrey Bogart and you know, Sam in Casablanca hadn't been so desperately in love with and devastated by, you know, what was her name? Elisa? It's been a lot of years. I want to say it was Katharine Hepburn. I'm not sure, frankly, now who played that role. But anyhow, if he hadn't been so desperately in love with her, if he hadn't had this inner demon, then he wouldn't have had that incredible dramatic moment at the end of the movie where he takes the two free get-out-of-jail tickets and gives them to her and her husband to leave Casablanca and save the world from the Nazis. So, in other words, if you want to make yourself powerful, you must create an enemy of equal or greater power in the political arena. This isn't, I'm not talking about you and your personal life, but you know, if you're writing a novel, if you're writing a screenplay, or if you're trying to gain political power, you must have an enemy. And you can only be as good as the enemy is bad. And therefore, whether the enemy is truly bad or not, whether the enemy is truly dangerous or not, you have to hype that enemy to high heaven. Or hell, actually. You have to say, this enemy is the devil incarnate in order to be perceived as a good guy. Look at what the Switboat veterans did to John Kerry, to John Kerry's reputation. All to make, you know, by contrast, George W. Bush look good and noble. So, all of which, by the way, brings us to our conservative alert for the day. The assault on Christmas. Yeah, I know I shared this with you last week, but it's continuing. RightMarch.com, under greater and greater attack, this joyous Christian holiday. And they've got all these lists. The CEO of Target stores banning the Salvation Army. The ACLU took the city of Cranston, Rhode Island, to court. The South Orange Maplewood School District in New Jersey has said that school bands can only play Frosty the Snowman and Winter Wonderland. No Christian Christmas carols. And they go on to say, well, we don't have to sit for this any longer. We've made it easier for you to hear your voice. Blah, 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 blah. To Christians, Christmas lights themselves radiate the religious symbol of Christ as light of the world. Why? You know, and, well, these guys are forgetting the fact that Christmas lights actually are an old pagan tradition. You know, they go back to the... And then they were incorporated into Christianity 300 years after Jesus was around. A little more than that. 360 years, roughly. If that, actually. The Christmas tree is probably a much more recent thing. But a lot of the pagan ceremonies were brought in because, you know, they would light the highest tree on the highest hill that they could on the shortest day of the year in the hope of reigniting the sun and bringing it back. And that was December 23rd, 24th, 25th. So they say, let's make our voices heard in this in a big way. Well, here's Media Matters for America has laid this out one more time. Here we go. Fox News is aggressively hyping several small controversies involving public holiday displays that don't explicitly mention Christmas in order to depict a widespread and sinister attack on Christmas by secular progressives. A couple of interesting things here. Number one, they're starting to attack people who call themselves progressives. Right? Liberals had been so vilified by these Reichwingers in the media, the Fox News, the Bimbo and Hannitys and whatnots. They had been so vilified by them that they had become too timid to call themselves liberals and started calling themselves progressives, some would say. Now, also, you know, there was a progressive movement in the United States back in the 19th century. It led to the direct election of the Senate. It led to the right of women to vote. It led to a lot of progressive reforms, the direct referendum initiatives in California and about 30 other states. It led to term limits in some states. The progressive movement led to the minimum wage. It led to child labor laws. It led in 1907 to Teddy Roosevelt getting pushed through Congress a law saying that corporations couldn't give money to politicians or political parties. A lot of good that's done us, right? Well, you know, as the NRA would say, you have to enforce laws. In any case, there was a progressive movement, and there are some who draw a distinction between liberals and progressives. But so many former liberals have now started calling themselves progressives that now you've got the legions of the Reich. Now, see, there I'm doing it, right? Oh, these guys are terrible. They're the other side. Well, I frankly think they are. I have to say, this is not plain fair, let's say. Fox News is aggressively hyping several small controversies involving public displays that don't explicitly mention Christmas in order to depict a widespread and sinister attack on Christmas by secular progressives. See, they are rebranding us. Get ready, folks. Led by hosts Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, Fox News anchors have returned continually to several minor states whose theme is the purported marginalization or persecution of Christians. A closer examination of each of these stories reveals that they hardly constitute an anti-Christmas trend. Beginning on December 3rd, O'Reilly began a recurring segment on the O'Reilly Factor called Christmas Under Siege. No, I kid you not. He's doing this. Christmas Under Siege. See, you've got these guys can only succeed if they continuously portray themselves as a victim. Yes, they have their own television network. Yes, they own several of the largest chains of radio stations in the country. Yes, they own the Washington Times. They have successfully intimidated the relatively moderate New York Times and Washington Post. They've gotten rules passed for things like MSNBC, which they own, General Electric owns, that if you're going to have a liberal on, you have to have two conservatives on. Even Chris Matthews has to dance to that tune. They've got think tanks that are cranking out articles left and right. They have taken control of the House, the Senate, the White House, the Supreme Court, and most, if not virtually all, with the possible exception of the Ninth Circuit, of the federal judiciary. And yet, the only way that they can get the average person behind them and with them is to claim that they are victims. Because the average person, in many regards, feels like a victim. People feel screwed. I mean, their paycheck is worth less. They can't get good health care. Their insurance companies are fighting with them every time they try to submit a claim. Their credit card companies are jacking up the rates. Their home interest payments are going up. They can't pay their bills. Their paychecks are going down. They're getting laid off. Their jobs are going off to India. They really are victims of these conservatives. And so for the conservatives to make these people who have a pervasive feeling of victimness but who haven't been able to articulate it, bring them into their fold. They have to come up with a, hey, we're all victims in this together. And because the majority of people in America are Christians, this is a good one. No, now it's not the gays who are going to get us. Now it's the secular progressives. And they're going to get us by doing away with Christmas. O'Reilly, all over the country, Christmas is taking flack. Yeah, right. This is just tragic. Just tragic. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Tonight, journey to a place where darkness battles light, and all that stands between them is the magic of one wizard. The Sci-Fi Channel presents the next great fantasy adventure, Legend of Earthsea.
So this is our destiny.
You know we've been brought together.
Danny Glover, Isabella Rossellini, X-Men's Sean Ashmore, Smallville's Kristen Kruk, a Sci-Fi Channel original miniseries, Legend of Earthsea, premieres tonight at 9, 8 Central, only on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I'm on the law and a low one. I'm on the law and a low one. I needed money cause I had none. I'm on the law and a low one. I'm on the law.
Not the best of ideas there. To fight the law. That's a great song, though. It really is. I love that song. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com gets you to our website. If you want to click on live chat, takes you to our chat room. Message boards takes you to the message board where you've got some 40,000 discussions going on in there. A whole variety of topics. It's actually organized by categories, so you can figure it out. And Blackwell locks out the recount volunteers. I mentioned it earlier. It's in Greene County. Green with an E at the end. Greene County is where it's happening. And we'll have more on that as the day goes along. But first, it's time for... Hey, Berlusconi alerts! Yes, indeed. You'll remember Silvio Berlusconi, the small-time crook and small businessman who started a couple of companies and then made enough money to buy a radio station and then bought another radio station and then bought another radio station and then bought a TV station and then bought a newspaper and then bought a radio network and then bought a TV network and then bought the other radio network. There were only two in Italy. And then bought the other TV network and then bought another newspaper and now owns 90% of the media in Italy. And the only TV and radio networks that he doesn't own in Italy are those run by the Italian government, their equivalent of National Public Radio and Television. And these are now... Eureka. Oh, sorry, I missed that. And these are now in the hands of Mr. Berlusconi's good buddies. So we got a Berlusconi alert for you. I'm going to interrupt my own Berlusconi alert, however, because I had the wrong screen up, and I didn't notice that Victoria Jones is on the line with our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service, and I want to hear that, and I can always get back to the Berlusconi alert, and I know, Victoria, you've got to move on. You've got a busy day there.
It's always busy in Washington, except when there's absolutely nothing to do, which hopefully will be the case in a few days' time when everybody heads out of town.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, the White House press briefing has just taken place. I attended it and snuck out a little bit early to make this call. And Scott McClellan obviously was asked an enormous amount of questions about the withdrawal of Bernard Kerik as Homeland Security nominee. And I asked one myself. My question was whether the president would consider appointing a Democrat to that position. And, of course, as usual, Scott McClellan would not be drawn. I also asked him
Joe Lieberman being the name that's floating around, right?
Right. Or Lee Hamilton from the 9/11 Commission, former congressman. That's the other name.
Although he'd probably toss it to Lieberman to get another Democrat out of the Senate.
This is the thing, isn't it? Yeah. That's what's so interesting about this.
Yeah.
Why would Lieberman possibly consider taking it?
Well, Lieberman has done a lot that I'm still scratching my head over in his career. So, anyway.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's neither one thing nor the other. So that was one of the big issues. One of the other issues was the poisoning of Yushchenko in Ukraine, and also charged by the premier in Ukraine that the U.S. was financing the opposition, which, of course, we said absolutely not, totally said that was not true. So those really were the main issues. Obviously, the nomination of Levitt, I believe it is, unless I got his name totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that we now await a Homeland Security nomination with great eagerness. And the sense also, the questions being asked, and the sense also that, yeah, okay, the nanny thing was kind of convenient. How fortunate that came out, because the other things that were coming out were really embarrassing.
Yeah, now nobody bothered to ask him why it was that Rumsfeld gave the answer he did when, in fact, this was a war of choice on our own timing, to quote George Bush, rather than a war that we were forced into.
Well, he was, it's weird how quickly a story becomes last week's story. He was asked about that last week, and I've forgotten the exact answer that he gave. But if I get a chance, I'd be willing to give it another shot.
Okay, yeah. And now it's water over the bridge, as it were. Although it's not to the young men and women being shot at over there. Blown up and bombed and whatnot. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for our daily report, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's a very Gotti Christmas on A&E.
Be quiet, I'm not talking to you. I want you away from me right now. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to look at you right now.
Join the Gottis for a special hour of caring.
I think you shouldn't get anything.
And sharing.
I don't have any jail! I don't have any jail!
Tune into A Very Gotti Christmas, tonight at 9, 8 Central, only on A&E.
There's so much love in the house.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters' plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters' plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I want to live. I want to kill. I've been a miner for a heart of gold.
Okay, back to our Berlusconi alert here. Should we cue up the music one more time? Yeah, I think it's a great idea. There we go. It's not quite Neil Young, but Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian Prime Minister. We've already given you his bio. He was charged with graft and corruption, specifically bribery. And he sort of got out of it. Yep, he got out of it. It's here's the story as the London Times reported it. Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian prime minister, escaped what appeared to be an almost certain conviction on a corruption charge today. In other words, all the evidence was there. Anybody could see he actually did it. Well, how did he get out? An almost certain conviction on a corruption charge today when a court in Milan invoked a statute of limitation and said, therefore, it could not rule on the case. They did not find him innocent. They said they could not rule because the statute of limitations had expired. This was a case that went back to the 1980s that involved his company, which was then called Finvest, an investment company. The ruling, read by to a packed Milan court, implied, again, this is for the Times from London article, implied that 68-year-old media mogul was guilty as charged of complicity in bribing a Roman judge, but could not be sentenced because of the time limit. Signor Berlusconi, a billionaire businessman, might add, the richest man in Italy and the controller of virtually all the nation's media, and the first serving Italian prime minister to stand in a criminal trial, was accused of corrupting the Rome judiciary in the late 80s and again in 1991 to win favorable rulings for his Finvest company. State prosecutors said he had authorized massive bribes, and they were looking for 8 years in the slammer for old Silvio, but he managed to wiggle out. Good old Silvio Berlusconi. Moving along, Blackwell locks out recount voters. As I said, we will be continuing to update this story as the day goes on. I know Louise is keeping an eagle eye out for news reports and will be bringing them to us. There are these hearings going on in Ohio on Friday, December in Columbus. On Friday, December 10th, this last weekend, 3 days ago, two certified volunteers for the Ohio recount team assigned to Greene County were in the process of recording voting information. This from the Fairness by Beckerman blog, by the way. Voting information from minority precincts in Greene County and were stopped mid-count by a surprise order from Secretary of State Blackwell's office. The Director of Elections stated all voter records from the state of Ohio are locked down and now are not considered public records, end quote. You guys going to look into how we did this election? You're going to have to stop. We're not going to show you. I doubt that's how Blackwell talks, but that was the gist of it. They were hand-copying voter discrepancies from precinct voting booths. Oh, we can't have that, can we? Voter discrepancies? Now, here's where it gets interesting. If Blackwell actually stopped the examination of voter discrepancies, and if he did it, you know, in a way that was framed as, these are no longer public records, these voting records, you can't look at them anymore, he may have committed a crime. The Ohio Revised Code, Title 35, Elections, Section 3503.26, in other words, the law in Ohio, requires all election records to be made available for public inspection and copying. Section 3599.161 makes it a crime, that's as in criminal activity, as in do not pass go, go directly to jail, do not collect $200, makes it a crime for any employee of the Board of Elections to knowingly prevent or prohibit any person from inspecting the public records filed in the office of the Board of Elections. Yes, the Ohio Revised Code, Title 35, Section 3599.161 says, if anybody from Ohio working for the Board of Elections tries to prevent or prohibit any person from inspecting public records filed in the office of the Board of Elections, they have committed a crime. And not only that, Ohio Revised Code 3599, Title 35, Section 3599.42, clearly states, and I quote, a violation of any provision of Title 35 of the Revised Code, which is the law I was just reading you, constitutes a prima facie case, prima facie, if fancy Latin for right on its face, right there, right in front of you, a prima facie case of election fraud within the purview of such title. So it sounds as though, or looks as though, or may even be a good solid example of voter fraud, or vote fraud, by Kenneth Blackwell. Could it be? Now, here's the question. Does Ken Blackwell have to prosecute himself? Well, he's the Secretary of State, not the Attorney General, so. But the Attorney General is also Republican in Ohio, as I recall. Blackwell spokesman Carlo Laparo, it's probably Laparo, said the records are to be treated with the utmost care until the recount is over. The two election observers say they later found the Greene County Board of Elections office unlocked Saturday morning, fueling their suspicions that they weren't allowed to examine records that might have been tampered with. It is shocking that they would first deny us access and then leave the records unlocked overnight, said Joan Quinn, a retired lawyer from Sacramento, California, an election observer acting on behalf of the Green Party, which asked for the recount and paid for it, by the way, in the Ohio vote. But Quinn and her colleagues say when they entered the unlocked building, this from the Dayton Daily News, by the way, article by Mehul Srivastava. Quinn and her colleagues say when they entered the unlocked building, voting machines and voter records had been left in the open. Quinn said she and her fellow observer were looking into the low turnout recorded in minority precincts, especially precincts 354, 224, and 355, which recorded voter turnouts in the 50% range, while the average for Greene County was 74%. For some reason in Ohio, in those counties where there were a lot of people who 4 years ago had heavily voted for Al Gore, instead of the average turnout that you were seeing of 70, 75, in some cases even 80%, in all the other districts in Ohio, in these districts that were heavily, that were expected to be heavily for Kerry, and in fact that the exit polls showed Kerry heavily winning, when you look at the recorded votes, turnout had dropped from the 70% range down to the 50% range. So when these people showed up and said, well, we'd like to actually look at those records. No, you can't do it. Get out of here. No, you can't. Yeah. I smell a rat. We will see. We will see. Be interesting to see what these hearings today turn up. Jerome Corsi. Remember Jerome Corsi? We actually had him on this program once. The guy who was the author of Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Unfit for Command was the title of the book. He was the head of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Him and this guy who had been John Kerry's shadow for years in 72 when Nixon had him chasing him around. Anyhow, Jerome Corsi, the guy who went on bulletin boards and referred to Muslims as ragheads, made anti-Semitic comments, neo-Nazi comments, which, to be fair to him, I should acknowledge, he has since not only apologized for, but repudiated. So maybe he truly has had a change in heart and no longer believes that just white Christians are the only decent people on earth, as his earlier comments would perhaps cause a reasonable person, I consider myself reasonable, would cause me to think, he thought. Of course, mind reading is always dangerous. Anyhow, he's hard at work on his next political project, preparing American public opinion for what he sees as a likely war with, guess who? Iran. Yep, Jerome Corzai has taken upon himself to get us ready for another war. Won't this just be marvelous, friends? As he said in a recent interview, the world cannot tolerate the potential that these mad mullahs might have deliverable nuclear weapons, not even one secretly developed. They might just launch on Tel Aviv. The moment the world intelligence community becomes convinced that could happen, either the U.S. alone or the U.S. plus Israel or Israel alone will seriously contemplate a preemptive strike, and I would be in favor of it. Uh-huh. Should we preemptively strike Pakistan? They're actually a little more aggressive in their support of terrorism than is Iran. In fact, bin Laden's probably hanging out there right now. And they've got a nuke. But Pakistan doesn't have any oil. So, why bother? Let them have nukes. Corzai, who believes a U.S.-Iran war could occur as soon as March. Are you getting this? Said his Iran campaign is an independent mission with no backing from either the White House or the Swift Boat Veterans Group. Now, presumably the Swift Boat Veterans Group is gone. Corzai's looking for a new gig. You know, it's tough, you know, when you're a right-wing hitman and the election's over and you're unemployed, you got to find something to do, and so he's trying to just start up a war. Yeah, everybody's got to do something. He's got a book out coming out about this. And apparently he's found a financial angel. He's found somebody to put some money behind what he's doing. Joseph Farah, the editor of the conservative website WorldNetDaily.com, is paying for his book. So here we have the Swift Boat Veterans. It is unclear. This is an article from the LA Times by Sonny Efron. It is unclear whether Corzai's credibility on the Iran issue will be affected by revelations that he had posted anti-Muslim slurs on another conservative website called FreeRepublic.com. Well, yeah, frankly, I doubt it. I mean, the guy's calling for a war against Muslims. So is anybody going to be amazed that on an anti-Muslim, that on another website he posted anti-Muslim comments? I mean, it's not particularly surprising to me. She goes on to say, Corzai is perhaps the most colorful. He probably wouldn't like that description because he might think that it meant that he's not fully Caucasian. Right? Corzai is perhaps the most colorful of the many conservatives. In fact, I'll bet that he's looking at the LA Times right now and he's going, this is liberal bias. Look at this. They're making me out to be something other. Corzai is perhaps the most colorful of the many conservatives who are beginning to thunder against Iran. She goes on to say, from a diplomatic point of view, it may be convenient for the administration to have outside groups rallying U.S. public sentiment against Iran. Well, just like we had the news media, the news organizations, and James Woolsey, the notorious neocon war profiteer and former CIA director out there beating the drum for the war in Iraq. Now we've got to have somebody beating the drum for a war in Iran. Are you suitably concerned? The administration, the LA Times notes, faces a dilemma. It cannot threaten strikes against Tehran for what U.S. officials say is Iran's refusal to end its nuclear programs without endangering Washington's already difficult relationship with the European nations who are doing the diplomatic heavy lifting. Let me translate this for you. Europe, the European nations, the European Union, has worked out a deal with Iran, where they've said, okay, we will continue to do business with you. We're not going to turn you into a pariah state. We'll continue to, you know, sell you Fruit of the Loom underwear, whatever it is that you want, as long as you promise us and let us verify that your nuclear program is for peaceful uses. Now, there's a lot of people who are saying Iran is sitting on 5, 6, 7, 8% of the planet's oil. Why do they need a nuclear power plant? And then there are others who say, well, they need it because, just like every other country, they realize that, yeah, they get that all that oil, but it's only going to last them 30, 40 years, and everybody else is running out. In fact, Saudi Arabia is in trouble now. Maybe they should hang on to it. And then you got the third bunch of people saying, no, this is just a scam. They're trying to build the bomb. And maybe they are, because they think it's the only thing that'll keep George Bush away. Who knows? 10 minutes to.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg recently reduced by 1 the number of firefighters on engine companies. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
New York City Fire Commissioner Nicholas Scapetta accepted a decision by Mayor Michael Bloomberg to reduce staff at 49 engine companies from 5 crew members to 4 because of a rise in medical leave. The move leaves only 11 of the 197 engine companies with a 5-person crew.
The priority of saving lives and safety should and must come first over penny pinching.
Uniform Firefighters Association spokesperson Tom Butler says the decision risks the safety of both firefighters and fire victims.
It's just a fact that less firefighters on a crew means it takes longer to actually fight a fire.
The decision to reduce staff size excuses the city from shifting around staff to cover posts and paying overtime at a time that the medical leave of firefighters has risen above 7.5%. The move will save the city about $1.4 million a month in overtime pay. The decision stems from a 1996 agreement between former president of the UFA, Tom Von Essen, and then Mayor Rudy Giuliani, that if medical leave rises above 7.5%, the mayor has the authority to cut staff. At a union meeting this week, delegates from the UFA unanimously voted no confidence about New York Fire Commissioner Nicholas Scapetta. The vote is only symbolic. Commissioner Scapetta called the vote pure politics. Mayor Bloomberg backed the commissioner and blamed firefighters for poor behavior, including sex, drugs, drinking, and fighting on the job. This is the latest dispute between the city and the union. The city has closed 5 ladder units in the past 2 years to accommodate changing needs of the city, but at the objection of the union, which says all ladder companies are needed. And the city and the union have been unable to agree on a contract for 2.5 years. For Wynn, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And see, here's the problem that the United States government is facing, is what do you do? What do you do? I mean, we're trying to stop Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. And they're saying, hey, listen, you labeled us as the axis of evil along with North Korea and Iraq. And you've already attacked Iraq with no provocation, and they had no weapons, and they represented no threat to you, but they had a whole pile of oil. Now, North Korea has developed nuclear weapons, and all of a sudden you stopped talking about attacking North Korea. And by the way, North Korea has no oil, so we figured you really didn't want to attack them in the first place anyway, but be that as it may, we've got oil, and we don't have nuclear weapons. And so if we don't want to get attacked, it seems to us that the thing to do is to get a nuclear weapon. So here we got John Bolton, the Undersecretary of State, just reading a paper. Right? Top diplomats from the United States and closest allies gathered this fall in Washington to hammer out a common approach, writes the LA Times, to this situation. The mood quickly soured. The administration refused to back European negotiations with Iran and instead insisted that Tehran be dragged before the UN Security Council to condemn it for concealing a nuclear weapons program. Now, isn't this an interesting irony? The European nations are saying, let's work something out with Iran. The U.S. is saying, out of one side of its mouth, that horrible UN, let's get rid of it. We don't need it. We don't want it. In fact, in the next hour, you're going to hear from Andrew Bernstein saying just that. Out of the other side of its mouth, it's saying, we need the UN to conduct elections in Iraq, and we need the UN to condemn Iran, much as they condemned or tentatively condemned Iraq. And the Europeans are saying, come on. Europeans demanded to know what good it would do to bring the Iran before the UN when Washington knew it couldn't muster enough Security Council votes even to slap their wrist. Bolton referred to another U.S. position paper. One stunned participant said he was not willing to discuss anything. See, what this says to me is that what these guys are thinking about is what Jerome Corzine is talking about, which is unilateral, preemptive war. In other words, send in some missiles and take out the nuclear facilities. You know, much like the Israelis did with the Iraqi nuclear facilities back 10, 12 years ago. Problem is, Hezbollah is aligned with Iran, and they are believed to have sleeper cells in the United States. They're actually a much more potent force than Al Qaeda. And so we take on Iran, and we may really have a problem. But don't trust this administration to be thinking these things through, frankly.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers' Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters' plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters' plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
If we have the technology to track the movements of everyone in America, we should use it, right? No, shout most of us, proud that our country has fought from the start to prevent prying authorities from constantly keeping tabs on where we go and what we do. So, how can the authorities break down this innate resistance that we Americans have to Big Brotherism? One simple word, whisper today's technocratic Machiavellians. Children. Of course, we love our children and naturally want them to be safe. There's the perfect opening for the snoopercrats. It's an insecure world, they darkly warn us. Terrorists, kidnappers, molesters, you name it. To protect children, we should electronically track them. It's out of love that we do this. Thus, the school district of Spring, Texas is now issuing radio frequency ID cards to its school kids so police can track each of them on a computer screen. Did little Jeannie stop off at her friend's house rather than going straight home after school? With her RFID tag, the authorities know where she is. It's security paranoia. This district has not had a single problem with child disappearances. But, says one mother, you hear about all this violence. So, like keeping track of livestock and Walmart merchandise, parents have okayed the tracking of their own children. Indeed, authorities in Spring are now considering having the RFIDs implanted under the skin of each child. Then they could track them 24/7. Not everyone is thrilled. It's too Big Brother for me, says a 15-year-old student. Something about the school wanting to know the exact place and time makes me feel kind of like an animal. This is Jim Hightower saying, exactly. Rebel, kids. But of course, the youngest ones can't rebel and will grow up without knowing any different system. Wearing a chip will be normal to them, and they'll not object to having one as an adult, too.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Should we get out of the United Nations? Or should we, as I suggest in my book, What Would Jefferson Do, work within to try and change the United Nations? Interesting debate. We have on the program this hour Andrew Bernstein, Dr. Andrew Bernstein. He's an adjunct professor of philosophy at Pace University at the State University of New York at Purchase, the author of 3 Ayn Rand titles for Cliff Notes, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, and Anthem. And I probably read at least 2 of those when I was in high school to make it through. Andrew Bernstein, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Tom.
Good to have you too, Andrew. And you're also, actually, the thing that this bio here that I have for you doesn't say is that you are a something or other with the Ayn Rand Institute. What's your position there?
I'm a senior writer for them. I do a lot of lecturing for them. And I just completed a book, you know, The Capitalist Manifesto, the historic, economic, and philosophic case for laissez-faire, which will be out in the spring. So that's
marvelous.
That's what I'm
working on. Well, you need to tell the folks at Ayn Rand to update your bio there.
Okay, I will, Tom.
It's on the speakers and writers page. Anyhow, Ayn Rand Institute, ARI.org. Or, I'm sorry, Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org is the website. And one of the reasons why I think it's so important, Andrew, that people hear your perspective is because Ayn Rand, in her book, particularly her book Atlas Shrugged, laid out what you know she called the objectivist philosophy. Alan Greenspan was initiated into her. I call it a cult. I'm sure you would call it something else, group or whatever.
Philosophy.
Okay. He was initiated into this in her apartment in New York City in the 1950s. She was a very influential thinker and writer. Her writings have spun off into the Libertarian Party, which is clearly different from, you know, has a lot of differences than from you guys, but the philosophical foundations are the same. And much of the modern conservative movement traces its roots not so much back to Edmund Burke, which Barry Goldwater would have done, but instead to Ayn Rand. And so I think it's really important that people hear what you have to say and that we have a discussion about these issues, if that's all right with you. And I'm assuming...
Well, I absolutely agree with what you just said, Tom, and I certainly appreciate your recognition of that and giving us a forum to discuss our ideas.
Well, and an opportunity for people who disagree with you to hear both sides of the argument, frankly, because I disagree with you. We're going to talk about this.
And that's why we believe in a free country.
There you go. Yeah, there are many things we agree on, actually, and a free country is one, although I would say, you know, we live in a democracy and it's a great thing, and you would say it ain't a democracy.
We live in a constitutional republic, and that's a great thing.
Okay. To split hairs, I'll say we live in a constitutionally limited democratic republic. But anyway, you write in this news release here that we recently received, the fundamental evil of the United Nations is that it draws no moral distinction between free nations and dictatorships. What does the United States gain from UN membership? Nothing. It only loses. You think we should pull out of the UN right now?
Yeah, I think we should pull out of the United Nations. I think we should, basically boot the UN out of the country, let them go set up shop in Paris or Moscow or wherever. And I think we should use the facility in New York City for free nations of the world. I think we need to draw a sharp moral distinction between freedom and dictatorships, not sanction the dictatorships, especially the ones trying to destroy us, and have an organization of the free countries to show the world that we stand for freedom, and we are not going to sanction the bloody dictatorships that so many countries around the world are.
Well, first of all, we sort of did that, not in that frame and in that context, but transforming the League of Nations into the United Nations. I mean, that was part of one of the goals, was to help promote democracy, and the United Nations itself has a major organization within it that works to promote democracy around the world. The United Nations is openly pro-democracy. I have to say, this is one of those rare instances where you and I, unfortunately, do agree on something. In my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, I have a chapter called Let's Reform the UN. And in it, I suggest that we should say that any nation whose elected officials are not elected in free and fair elections only gets a partial vote or gets no vote in the United Nations. In other words, if the people being represented, if the folks in the UN aren't there as a result of democracy, then they shouldn't be participating in a democracy. But where we differ, and I think that's actually an important change that should be made. Where we differ, though, is that you just want to toss the whole thing out, and I want to say, let's fix it from within. I mean, the United States of America, when we started this country, we had slavery. Women couldn't vote in many states. Men who didn't own property in many states couldn't vote. Does that mean that we should have just thrown that out, too?
Well, remember, I mean, the United States was, also you have to place that in historical context, that was the 18th and early 19th centuries, not the 21st century. But the most important point is that, in principle, the United States was a pioneering nation, I mean, intellectually and morally pioneering, in that it was the first country that stood up for the principle of individual rights, whereas the United Nations was a late 20th century development, is 200 years after the birth of freedom in America. One of its founding members was the Soviet Union, that at that time, under Joseph Stalin, was the leading mass murder regime in history.
But Stalin, just to keep history straight here, Stalin went along with the UN because Churchill and Roosevelt, were pushing this thing. It wasn't Stalin's idea.
No, but Roosevelt made a tremendous error in wanting this blood-drenched dictatorship to be part of the UN, be a permanent member of the Security Council, have veto power. The idea that Syria or Sudan.
So then Jefferson made a terrible mistake.
Commission, the United Nations, claiming to protect the rights of individual human beings is farcical. They're bloody dictators, and they sponsor terrorism against the West.
And the UN points this out. The UN points this out every year. Every single year, the UN points out the nations that are violating human rights within their own countries. In fact, we just last week had the anniversary of the UN the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was first written in 1948. It was ratified on the 10th of December. It was, you know, last Friday. The anniversary was last Friday. And they pushed this thing. I mean, there's a major thing in here. What's wrong with trying to reform an organization from within and using that organization as a way, as a means to promote democracy around the world? I mean, the United Nations monitors, in many cases, sponsors, for example, democratic elections. The United States has turned to the UN and said, if you guys can't help us hold elections in Iraq, nobody's going to believe that they're credible. By dumping the UN, we're going to harm our own self-interest, much less the high ideal of what I call democracy and you call a republic.
Well, let's hold the United Nations to its stated principles. If Sudan and Syria and above all Iran and countries like that don't reform immediately, let's boot them the hell out. They don't belong in any forum of civilized nations, especially the ones like, and Iran is the prime example, who are sponsoring terrorist attacks against America. I mean, I think it's suicidal for us to consider them civilized nations and treat them as if they were some kind of moral equal. So let's hold the UN to its high ideals, and let's put some teeth into this organization, get the dictatorships out, rename it the Free Nations of the World. No dictatorship need apply.
Wait a second. I'm getting a whole bunch of mixed messages here. You say, you know, let's do away with it. Then you say, let's put some teeth into it. You know, as I said, I don't disagree that nations that are not democratic should be treated somehow differently in the UN. But if we extend your logic, basically what you're saying is that the United States shouldn't have allowed Georgia into the Union because they were blood-drenched and they sanctioned slavery. Yes, it was 200 years ago, but I mean, if you want to change the behavior of other organizations, you don't stick them outside and put a fence around. You bring them in and you work with them to change their behavior.
Well, Tom, I mean, we might as well have accepted Hitler into this organization at that time. There's no...
Well, Hitler actually left the League of Nations in 1936.
Any bloody dictator in. And furthermore, look at the results. We need to defend ourselves. I mean, Bush invaded the wrong country, you know, Iraq. I mean, attack, we should have gone after Iran, our main enemy. But if
we're going to attack
someone, defend itself against Iran, we're going to go to the UN and seek permission from Iran. You know, one of the members of Iran's allies, like Syria and the other.
But Iran is not on the Security Council. They don't have veto power.
We need to defend ourselves.
So Iran doesn't have veto power. They're not on the Security Council.
But they're a member of the United Nations. I mean, if for us to seek some kind of
so war, therefore we have
we
even
defend ourselves against people who are attacking us is suicide.
No, but therefore
we
have
the same thing as Nazi Germany on that logic, since they would have been part of the UN.
But Andrew, we have even more moral power with them because they are members of the United Nations. We can, you know, we can embarrass them in front of their peers. They want to hold that stature and that status. It gives us more of an opportunity to interact in a way that might favorably bring about a transformation there. In my opinion,
I understand, but I mean, where I disagree is I think that where the United Nations does anything effective around the world, it's overwhelmingly based on American moral sanction, American power, and American...
No, increasingly,
money.
Actually, it's based on European
United
power.
Nations to do good around the world. In fact, I think the United Nations impedes us because it's basically a debating society of third world dictators who use it as a platform to denounce America and the West.
The United Nations does an off. They do an enormous amount of good around the world. They're feeding people. They're healing people. They're helping put together democracies. They've got incredible resources for nations that, you know, the former Soviet nations that came out of the Soviet Union without the United Nations. Many of them would absolutely have been lost and devolved back into internal dictatorships. You could argue Belarus still did, but you know, it's a whole other topic. Andrew, let's take a call here. We've got, if you don't mind, 1-866-889-8894. We've only got about 2 minutes left here in this segment. Xavier in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Xavier.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
You're on with Dr. Andrew Bernstein of the Ayn Rand Society.
Yes. I understand
Institute.
That the conservatives are concerned that the United Nations is going to become like a one-world government. And it's my feeling that the United States, vis-a-vis PNAC, is doing just that ourselves, or I say our government is. And I'm thinking that The U.S. isn't even paying its dues in the U.N. as far as I'm correct on that. And the United States and Israel vote one way, and the rest of the member nations vote another way, and we get our way. So I was thinking, why doesn't the U.N. just boot the United States out, or we just get out and let the U.N. get about the business of, you know,
but again, I mean, that's what Hitler did in 1936 when he pulled out of the League of Nations. He said, you know, enough of this stuff. I don't want to be pressured by other nations not to invade Poland. You know, he was very offended by that. Andrew, your thoughts?
I would love to see the separation between the United States and the UN. Let them get the hell out of New York City, go to some third world country. Let them convene in Havana. We'll see what they get done without American membership, without American money, without American might. The UN will accomplish absolutely nothing without America. Whereas without the UN, we'll be free to defend ourselves. I'm going to go crawl on our hands and knees to the countries who will want.
We're free to defend ourselves right now, Andrew. If a nation attacks us, we don't need the UN to declare war.
Well, tell that to President Bush, because he...
President Bush
did.
President Bush
President
Bush attacked Iraq without the permission of the United Nations. I mean, that was the whole point.
Okay, let's
finish this in just a second. We have to take a break here just a second, Andrew. We'll finish this conversation right after. It's 20 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartmann program. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight, journey to a place where darkness battles light, and all that stands between them is the magic of one wizard. The Sci-Fi Channel presents the next great fantasy adventure, Legend of Earthsea.
So this is our destiny.
You know we've been brought together.
Danny Glover, Isabella Rossellini, X-Men's Sean Ashmore, Smallville's Christian Kruk, a Sci-Fi Channel original miniseries, Legend of Earthsea, premieres tonight at 9, 8 Central, only on the Sci-Fi Channel.
If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartmann.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We're privatizing Medicare, it's history, and what will take its place will be a prime example, truly ample, opportunity.
An opportunity for the financial and banking industry is what it's going to boil down to. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Andrew Bernstein, Dr. Andrew Bernstein, adjunct professor of philosophy at Pace University and State University of New York at Purchase, senior writer for the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org, and author of the upcoming book, The Capitalist Manifesto. 1-866-889-8894. And Andrew, we got a bunch of folks who want to talk with you. Kent in Chicago is on the line first. Hey, Kent, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. What's up, Kent?
Tom, I don't mean to be rude or anything, but after listening to Andrew, he sounds like a blithering idiot.
Okay. Well,
let's start
beyond
with Iran.
Beyond
let's
calling names, let's get into details.
Let's start with Iran.
Okay.
Okay. The people of Iran don't hate us because of some nebulous reasons. They hate us because we supported the bloodthirsty dictatorship called the Shah. Okay. We go back to South Africa, apartheid. Caspar Weinberger said the women of America will not give up their diamonds so the people of South Africa can have a majority rule. Okay? We have had a history of supporting people that were suppressed. So I don't know what this guy is talking about. He's an idiot.
Well, Andrew, your response. First of all, what does that have to do with whether or not we should be in the United
States? He's coming off on this moral high horse, like we're the moral do-gooders in the world.
Okay.
We have supported countries where it was all about resources. We didn't give a hoot about the people.
Yeah, okay. Andrew, your thoughts?
Well, I appreciate the courtesy and the respect. I'll refrain from responding in kind. I'll only say that for whatever
your memory
America's
must be terribly
flaws,
short if you don't seem to remember history.
Certainly has some. It's been by far the freest country of the world. I think.
Wait a second. You're saying the United States, Andrew,
far more good.
Andrew,
than
excuse me.
Country
just,
history.
Just a second. I'm really not trying to filibuster you here, but you're saying the United States is the freest country in the world.
Yeah, by far.
Okay, and you say that I'm assuming you know you're excluding things like Sweden and Norway because economically they're not as free because they pay higher taxes.
Well, yeah, economically they're mixed economies. I mean, they have a great deal of government ownership, a lot of socialist elements, a large welfare state where people.
Okay, but what about the point that Kent makes?
Working, so
that I think is actually a fairly good point that the United States has a long history of supporting bloody dictatorships around the world, and the United Nations at least acknowledges the bloody dictators among them and points them out, and tries to embarrass them, tries to change them. Why not stay with the United Nations and help change this? Your point, Kent? I mean, is that
yes?
Okay, Andrew.
No, I mean, let me tell you what I think. So first of all, if the United Nations does any good at all, if it saves people's lives, if it's ends famine, it's because of the free nations of the world, especially America, not because of the dictatorships around the world. And I think we need to stand up in every possible way for individual rights, limited government, and global capitalism. And this is the road to freedom and prosperity. So we need to make clear we stand with the free nations. We isolate and anathematize the dictators, and especially those who attack us.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Shah. You know, he's bringing up specific points like this. The Shah was certainly a dictator, but I mean, he was a Boy Scout compared to Khomeini and the, you know, the thugs who followed.
Yeah, who are Boy Scouts compared to Mugabe? But we're doing nothing about Mugabe. He's got no oil.
For example, I mean, blacks had far more rights under the apartheid regime, as bad as it was, compared to all the bloody dictators like Mobutu or Idi Amin. I mean, blacks were trying to get into South Africa, for God's sake, not get out.
Yeah, where we part company is you're saying that global capitalism is the solution to these problems. And I say, you know, it's the cause of many of these problems, the diamonds in South Africa, for example. Let's go to Sarah from Chicago. Sarah, you're on the line. We've only got about a half a minute left here with Andrew.
No, I just wonder, I have to agree with the previous gentleman from Chicago, and I'll try and be more courteous about it, although Andrew doesn't really deserve it, but I wonder what his real motivation is for wanting to get rid of the UN. The U.S. does what it wants anyway, so does Israel for that matter. So okay. They've been favored in the UN.
Okay, we have to wrap it up there, Sarah. So, Andrew, I'll give you the last 10 seconds to respond there.
I, like I said, I want to stand for freedom, individual rights. I want to show the world that we anathematize and oppose dictators. And I think we need to annihilate the dictatorships who attack us, notably the Islamist regime of Iran.
Kill them to save them.
Kill them to save us.
Okay. All right. Andrew Bernstein of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Andrew, thanks for being with us today.
Anytime, Tom. Thank you.
Okay. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's a very Gotti Christmas on A&E.
Be quiet. I'm not talking to you.
I want you away from me right now. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to look at you right now.
Join the Gottis for a special hour of caring.
I think you shouldn't get anything.
And sharing.
I don't have any jail. I don't have any jail.
Tune into A Very Gotti Christmas tonight at 9, 8 central, only on A&E.
There's so much love in the house.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. With two of the AFL-CIO's biggest unions weighing in with reform proposals, the Teamsters' Greg Carpinian told Workers Independent News that the national labor movement will find a way to remain united. Carpinian says he thinks after it's all over, the AFL-CIO will stay united, but that change is the order of the day. And Carpinian says whoever runs for the presidency of the AFL-CIO, whether it's John Sweeney or someone else, they're going to have to respond to the proposals for reform. The Teamsters' plan calls for cutting the AFL-CIO national budget and rebating money directly back to unions with a track record of vigorous organizing. Carpinian says where the Teamsters' plan differs from the SEIU's is in not concentrating power in the AFL-CIO. Carpinian says the Teamsters are trying to carve out a middle ground, and if that isn't successful, there could be a split in the AFL-CIO. If that happens, Carpinian says, only time will tell if it's good or bad for the labor movement.
The Service Employees International Union also recently laid out their desires for the future of labor. SEIU International Executive Vice President Gerald Hudson broke down the union's Unite to Win proposal at a leadership plenary called Labor at the Crossroads, held on December 2nd and 3rd in New York City.
Our goal is to work with other unions to make bold and dramatic changes that will give our movement real unity and real strength.
The SEIU has been pushing for unions to unify and to put aside differences and stop seeing each other as competitors.
We believe that in the matter of fashioning an instrument powerful enough to promote the interests of workers against globe-trotting, predatory, multinational corporations, that big is better.
In addition to the unions standing side by side, the SEIU has called on unions to put a focus on diversity. Hudson says that there is a legacy of white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia that needs to be overcome in order to build a strong labor movement. The SEIU believes, and the Teamsters have agreed, that if unions keep 50% of what they have traditionally given to the AFL-CIO, that money can be put into national and local organizing. The SEIU wants the AFL-CIO to focus on unionizing industries that currently lack unions, and also building up unions in areas like the South and Southwest. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Not only were there more seniors than ever before in 2003, they were healthier, wealthier, and better educated than generations before them. According to a study by the Federal Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics, people over 65 65 make up 12% of our population, accounting for 36 million Americans. On a downside, the study finds that the bonuses aren't distributed equally. The net worth of older white households is 5 times larger than that of black households.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I love my country so much, man. Like an exasperating friend. Dum, 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 dum.
And welcome back. The latest from the hearings in Columbus, Ohio. Some interesting things here. Congressman John Conyers said that if they want the Ohio electors to postpone their... Oh, that he wants... But they, the folks, you know, Conyers and the folks investigating this, want the Ohio electors to postpone their vote. He said the closer people look at it, the worse it gets. It looks like the people of Ohio have something to hide. Could this be, by any chance, those counties where they were seeing 50% turnout compared to 70% turnout in the next county over, but this county was a county that was going to heavily go for John Kerry? Interesting. John Conyers pledged the Democrats and the House Judiciary Committee are going to continue to investigate until they find answers. Maxine Waters called the Ohio Ground Zero of the 2004 race and said it shows that the election was filled with fraud. I would have to say I agree with her. She said that it involves issues that are bigger than who wins or loses. And this, see, whatever's, I'm telling you, whatever's going on in Ohio, and it sure is increasingly looking like there's a lot that's going on in Ohio. Whatever it is, it's going on all over the country. You want to see the problems, look in some of these other states that also barely went for Bush or largely went for Bush with all sorts of weird anomalies. Why were there those people setting up those tables in Nevada and Oregon where they were asking people to sign up, register to vote, and then tearing up the voter registration cards of anybody who dared check the box saying that they were Democratic? Why did they have people with these phony decriminalize medical marijuana petitions where, in fact, when people signed, filled out the card and signed it, they were changing their voter registration? And the result of this, of course, being that when these folks showed up to vote, they were in the wrong precinct. There was something wrong. And therefore, they were given a provisional ballot. And here, this is interesting. Jesse Jackson says he spoke with John Kerry. And he called for an inquiry, he being, I'm assuming, Jesse Jackson here, into 92,000 votes where there was not a selection for president. Can you imagine going into the voting booth on election day, 92,000 people in Ohio, going into the booth on election day and deciding, you know, I think I'll vote for the dog catcher, and I think I'll vote for the county commissioner, and I'm definitely going to vote for the state senator. But president? Nah. Well, Ken Blackwell would have you believe 92,000 people did just that. In addition to that, 155,000 people in Ohio. Keep in mind, this is a state that if 60,000 people had voted for Kerry instead of Bush, John Kerry would be president. 155,000 people went to the trouble of showing up at the polling station, went to the trouble of demanding that they be given a provisional ballot because they couldn't find their names on the list. Could this be another felon purge like in Florida? So-called felon, where 60, 70, 80, 90,000 people are bumped off the voting rolls because somebody in Texas has a similar name. 155,000 people went to the trouble of taking time off work, driving to the polling place, or walking to the taking the bus, whatever it took to get there, showed up at the polling place, said, "Here I am to vote." They were saying, "Your name's not on the list, must be in the wrong precinct," or so. "Well, here's a provisional ballot, fill this thing out." They fill out the provisional ballot. And Ken Blackwell, for reasons known only to himself at this moment, the co-chair of the Bush for President Committee and Secretary of State of Ohio, says, "We're not going to count those votes." Not going to check them out. Green Party candidate David Cobb announced a report that voting machines, possibly from Franklin County in Columbus, were tampered with prior to the recount. This is called wiping them free of fingerprints. Attorney Cliff Arenbach, who is challenging the election, also filed a request for a temporary restraining order. Congressman John Conyers sent a letter to the governor of Ohio, Republican Bob Taft, and grandson, I believe, of the former president of the same name, Mr. Taft, asking the Ohio electors to cast their vote for president conditionally until the vote recount is done. Lots of interesting stuff coming out here. Time will tell, as they say. Time will tell. I want to get back to the UN for just a minute here. First, let's got some folks patiently waiting here. Let's go to the phone line. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. So what's the latest of the whole Ohio tobacco? Is it like over? Is it over? Is the presidential election officially over? Do we have any chance in hell of getting anything out of this?
No, Sean, the presidential election has not yet been held. The president, the founders of this country, in their infinite wisdom, and actually they had some good reasons for doing it, which is a whole other discussion, but they created this thing called the Electoral College. And as Rehnquist pointed out in his, I believe it was Rehnquist, it might have been Scalia, in the lead decision in Bush v. Gore, when George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the recount of the state of Ohio, of Florida, rather, in 2000. He pointed out the Constitution doesn't say that we have the right to vote for President of the United States. We don't. It doesn't even say specifically that you have the right to vote for electors. It says each state shall determine how it's going to, you know, how it's going to determine who its electors are and send them to Washington, D.C. And the electors are selected by the states. In this case, I believe it's today. It's the first Monday after the first Tuesday of December, as I recall. And then the first something or other, the first Monday or Tuesday or whatever it is of January, which I believe is going to be January 6th this year, the votes from the electors are opened. The ballots are opened in Washington, D.C. It takes a while to get them there. It used to be the old Pony Express. And the president of the Senate, which is, in this case, it can be a rotating position. I mean, every week, generally, somebody else is filling in. But the technical president of the Senate is the vice president of the United States, in this case, Dick Cheney. The president of the Senate opens the votes and reads them or tabulates them and announces who the president's going to be as a result of the vote by the electors. So the actual election for president of the United States is cast today. The votes are being cast today by the states when they're determining what electors they're going to send to Washington, D.C., and is tabulated and announced, as I recall, on January 6th in Washington, D.C.
So what do we have to do is there anything we the people can do to see that? You know, that justice is served, that George Bush doesn't get back in?
Sean, I'm assuming that you know who your two senators are and your congressman is or congressperson is. They're from.
Yes, and I've called them about this.
You have called them. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, for those who haven't, the telephone number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Also, if you go to TomHartmann.com, There, over on the left-hand side, there's a little link that says you can click here to notify, to talk to Congress. And it takes you to a page on the People for the American Way website. And they have a form where you can, you know, it's very easy. You can fill it in, put in your zip code, it figures out who to send it to, and it'll send emails to these folks.
Well, all I told them on the phone is that I did not agree with the Ohio vote, and I think it should be redone. But is there anything specific that we need to ask for? Like, what exactly do we need to say?
Yeah, well, what I would say, if I had my member of Congress on, and oddly I do every Friday on the program here, but in any case, what I would say is, number one, what have we done in the United States by privatizing the vote? I am outraged that the vote has been privatized, that private for-profit corporations are maintaining our voter roll lists, are purging our voter roll lists, are holding in secret from us the software that processes our vote on electronic voting machines and thus telling us for whom we voted. This, in my opinion, is a violation of the fundamental tenets of democracy. This is the privatization of the most important of all the commons, all the functions of government. This is a crime against democracy, and it must not stand. That's the first thing I'd say. And secondly, I'd say, you know, and why are we having partisan elected officials who are parts of campaigns? The chairman of the Ohio, the co-chairman of the Ohio Bush for President campaign in charge of counting the vote? I mean, you think things stink in the Ukraine. And number three, this vote has there are so many questions around this vote in Ohio, and not just Ohio, but many other states. And you live in Indianapolis, in Indiana. Why don't you say to your elected officials, I'd like to know what's going on in Indiana. Was my vote actually counted? Can you tell me that my vote was counted? You know, raise a little personal hell in the local vicinity, as it were, and send them an email, send them a personal letter, send them a telegram, a fax, whatever it takes to get that message through. Because Congress essentially in 1982, with the Help America Vote Act, privatized the vote. And that was the first major crime against democracy, Sean, and that's when it began.
Unfortunately, Sean, I don't think the media is going to be very helpful. Up until now, has not been helpful at all about this.
No, you're absolutely right, Sean. I totally agree with you, and that's why it's up to us to be speaking out and speaking out loudly, and using alternative media as well. You know, use spam your friends, use email. Write for blogs. Get stuff out there. Write letters to the editor of the newspaper. A lot of people don't realize the two main things that brought about the American Revolution were committees of correspondence and pamphleteers. Committees of correspondence were groups mostly of women who got together and collectively wrote letters to the editor of newspapers. We can still be doing that. And the pamphleteers were people who in the middle of the night would run around and they'd stick pamphlets up in public places saying, you know, the East India Company meet at the Boston Harbor tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. And today's pamphleteers are the emailers and the bloggers and the alternative websites. So, you know, go to these websites, find these articles, and send them out to as many people as you can. Let people know about it. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program. Happy Monday.
Thanks. I'd like to talk about that gentleman you had on.
Andrew Bernstein from the Ayn Rand Institute, yes.
But first, you know, you do raise a spectacular point about this privatization of voting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tom, they never had a formal debate on that. Should we do that with the people of this country? And we never even voted on should we do that.
I'm not even sure they had a formal debate about it in Congress, Armin. It wouldn't surprise me if this is one of those bills that came out on Tuesday, got voted on Wednesday, and signed into law on Thursday.
Well, we know what some people call Congress.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's not go there. But there's so much reform necessary on so many levels, and it's only going to happen if there's another progressive populist movement in the United States, another uprising as there was in the late 19th century, and as there was against the Vietnam War, as there was in the women's movement, as there was in the civil rights movement, and it's time to have a democracy movement in the United States. And this is the beginning of it. Liberal talk radio is part of it. The blogosphere is part of it. The progressive internet websites, they're all part of it. Anyhow, what was your comment about the UN?
Well, the gentleman you had on, you know, in my opinion, I hope I'm not assuming, but he's just a typical mouthpiece for the globalist. Why do I say that? Because they all spew this freedom, freedom. They love throwing the word around. But then you're a wise man. You make them define it. and they don't seem to go beyond just vague innuendo.
The context in which Bernstein and others who are objectivists, libertarians, and pseudo-conservatives are globalists is in the context that they believe that global multinational corporations should rule the world.
Well, but they always want to set this stuff up with other people's blood and other people's money and their
profit. but I mean the issue with regard to the UN, the reason that they're opposed to the UN, in my opinion, I mean Andrew's not here to defend himself at the moment, but I'm not going to even try to speak for him. In my opinion, the reason that so many of these folks, let's set aside Andrew, the reason that the O'Reillys of the world or whatever, the cons that you see on Fox News, the reason that they're so opposed to the United Nations is that, and they're not opposed to the World Trade Organization, is because they would rather have the World Trade Organization, a collection of nations and corporations ruling the world, than have the United Nations, a collection of nations which holds up Article 1 of the Universal Declaration of Human Beings. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They're endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in spirits of brotherhood.
Right.
Say what? You know, what does that say about capitalism? You know, where's the... Everybody has a right to make a profit in here. That's their...
Because they want that structure. Tom, you're right. But the reason you need to go further, and I'll say it for you, if you agree, fine. The reason they want to set up the capitalistic structure for manipulation is because that's obviously way to their advantage of manipulating the people as societies and cultures, and they feel that that would be far more advantageous than the rule of law that everybody has to go by, and that smells somewhat democracy, and that's their biggest fear because they can't manipulate that.
I absolutely agree with you, Armin. What we're talking about here is the essential battle between fascism and democracy, fascism being defined as the merger of corporate and state interests. And these guys want to see corporations ruling the world. They're quite happy with it. Bernstein came right out and said he thought global capitalism was the thing that was going to save.
He's indirectly working for corporations. The money that's feeding that boy, that's giving him full health benefits, giving him full secure retirement, is money that the corporations are funneling him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that. There are people who actually believe this, and Bernstein is one of them. They actually believe they're idealists. And, you know, God save us from the idealists, particularly the ones who don't have my ideals. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be back.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. After a six-year-long campaign, the Working Families Party, labor and religious organizations finally scored a victory as New York became the 16th state to raise its state minimum wage. Alex Navarro is communications director for the Working Families Party of New York.
The legislation that will go into effect on January 1st will increase the minimum wage in New York State from $5.15, the current federal level, to initially $6 on January 1st, 2005, then to $6.75 January 1st, 2006, and finally to $7.15 on January 1st, 2007.
In July, both houses of the state legislature voted to increase the state's minimum wage to $7.15 by January 2007. New York Republican Governor George Pataki promptly vetoed the measure, saying it would hurt business owners. But in August, the state assembly voted to override the veto, and yesterday the state Senate followed suit.
The state Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, voted overwhelmingly to override Governor Pataki's veto, voting 51-7 to actually override a veto by a governor from their own party. It was quite remarkable, and it's really a demonstration of how important this issue was to so many voters across the state.
According to supporters of the legislation, an estimated 1.2 million New Yorkers will directly or indirectly get a raise during the three-part phase-in period.
Increasing the minimum wage is actually good for New York State's economy and certainly good for New York State's workers. It puts money in the pockets of people who will spend it and spend it locally. It's a much more effective economic stimulus mechanism than giving tax cuts to the affluent who go and spend that money out of state. This is good for New York State's economy, it's good for New York State businesses, and it's good for New York State's workers.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
In fact, there's an entire book out now saying it's all the boomers' fault, right? Talking about my generation. The floodgates are opening on Bernard Kerik. Kerik cheated on his wife with Judith Reagan. That's Rush Limbaugh's publisher, as I recall. She also is the one who wanted to pull Michael Moore's book. And a corrections officer. Now, these are unconfirmed rumors. Former NYPD Commissioner Bernard Kerik conducted two extramarital affairs simultaneously, using a secret Battery Park apartment for the secret for the passionate liaisons, the Daily News has learned. Amazing. Well, he's following in the footsteps of his mentor, Rudy Giuliani. Remember when Giuliani's wife was on TV saying that she supported him through this difficult time, prostate cancer and whatnot, and they had this split-screen thing at the same time that she was saying this. He was announcing that he was going to divorce her, and she saw that, and they videotaped him, and this just look of horror on her face as she's seen, well... Anyway, so apparently Kerik is cut of the same fabric. 1-866-889-8894. Let's wrap up the day here with a call from Dave in Humboldt County, California, listening on KGOE there, isn't it, Dave?
Yes.
Hey,
Tom,
Dave.
You're discussing this voter fraud and deception is so much appreciated. All of America goes and looks in their newspapers and sees nothing of this. And we turn on our major TV media and see nothing of it.
So well, Dave, you need to be calling them and saying, why am I not seeing anything about
this? Oh,
I
just, believe me, I do, Tom.
Okay. Well, our listeners, let me say to our listener, one of the things in my rant about what you can do that I hugely forgot was pick up your local newspaper and look at the masthead. The masthead is not that thing on the top of page one. That's called the front page, or I forget what it's called. Anyway, the masthead is the piece inside that says, here's the publisher, here's the editor, here's the, here are the names and phone numbers. And call the publisher of the newspaper or the editor-in-chief and say, why are you not covering the election irregularities scandal in Ohio? And particularly call the New York Times, because they have not gone near this thing.
Stealing our free elections and stealing our free press are the two worst things they could have done to us, and I think they've done it.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, Dave. It's looking more and more like that to me every single day, and it pains my heart for this country that I love. Thanks for the call, Dave. I do appreciate it. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. To Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering it with us today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. To Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. To Ben for our archives over at White Rose Society. To all the folks in our chat room for showing up. Stick around, guys. We've got more coming. Thanks to our sponsors for making this program possible. Thanks to Jay for our music. And thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.